Chapter 28, Chain of Command. Returned from Raltir, Maul sat cross-legged on the floor in the Limerge building while Sidious debriefed him. Having just terminated an irritating communication with the Nymoidians, Sidious was in no mood for games.
"The way you make it sound, my apprentice, it seems almost an indignity that none survive to spread the word of your massacre."
"Your orders were that none should, master."
"Yes," Sidious said, continuing to circle him. "And not one of them proved a challenge?"
"No, master."
"Not Sinya?"
"I decapitated the Twi'lek."
"Not Migella?"
"My blade halved the Night Sister after she tried to defeat me with summoned Force Lightning."
Sidious paused for a moment.
"Not even Garen?"
"No."
Sidious detected a note of hesitation.
"No what, Darth Maul?"
"I drowned him."
Touching his chin, Sidious stood where the Zebrok could see him.
"Well, someone had to have dealt the wound you suffered to your left hand, unless, of course, you gave it to yourself."
Maul clenched the black-gloved hand.
"There is no pain where strength lies."
"I didn't inquire if the wound hurt. I asked who was responsible."
"Garen,"
Maul said quietly. Sidious feigned surprise.
"So he was something of a challenge, being slightly Force-sensitive."
"He was nothing compared with the power of the dark side."
Sidious studied him.
"Did you tell him as much, my apprentice? Answer honestly."
"He came to the conclusion."
"He identified you as a Sith. Did he assume, then, that you were a Sith Lord?"
Maul stared at the floor.
"You revealed that you answer to a master, am I correct?"
Maul forced himself to respond.
"Yes, master."
"And perhaps you went so far as to say something about the revenge of the Sith?"
"I did, master."
Sidious approached him, his face contorted in anger.
"And if by some marvel Garen had managed to escape or even defeat the one being army that is Darth Maul, what repercussions might we be facing, apprentice?"
"I beg your forgiveness, master."
"Perhaps you're not worthy of the infiltrator after all. The moment you allowed yourself to become distracted, the Black Sun leader cut open your hand."
Maul remained silent.
"I hope you thanked him before you killed him," Sidious went on, "because he taught you a valuable lesson. When you face someone strong in the Force, you must remain focused, even when you're convinced that your opponent is incapacitated. Then is not the time to bask in the glory of your victory or draw out the moment. You must deliver a killing strike and be done with it. Reserve your self-praise for after the fact, or you will suffer more than a hand wound."
"I will remember, master."
The silence attenuated.
"I want you to leave Coruscant for the time being."
Maul looked up in alarm.
"Take the infiltrator and your combat droids and return to your former home. There, train and meditate until I recall you."
"My lord, I beg—"
Sidious held up his hands.
"Enough. You executed the mission well, and I am pleased. Now learn from your mistake."
Maul rose slowly, bowed his head once, and headed for the hangar. Watching him leave, Sidious examined the nature of his unease. Might he, in a similar situation, have given in to an urge to gloat and reveal his true identity? Had Plagueis done so before killing Varuna? Had he felt compelled to come out from behind his mask? To be honest, or was Maul's revelation to Garen nothing more than a symptom of the dark side's growing impatience and its demand for full disclosure?
Black Sun is in utter disorder, Palpatine told Higo Damask as they strolled among the sightseers that crowded Monument Plaza. Hundreds were clustered around the summit of Umate, which jutted from the center of the bowl-shaped park, and mixed being groups of others were trailing tour guides toward the old Senate Agora or the Galactic Museum. Prince Zizor and Size Frome will inherit the dregs.
Again, the Zabrak proves his value, Damask said. You trained him well.
Perhaps not well enough, Palpatine said after a moment. While I was questioning him about a wound he received, he confessed to having divulged his identity to Alexei Garen.
Angling his mask away from Palpatine, Damask said,
Garen is dead. What does it matter now?
The Mune's flippant tone put Palpatine further on edge, but his composure held.
This may be the last time I'm permitted to appear in public without armed escort, he said in a casual way. When Queen Amidala informed me of Varuna's unexpected death, she mentioned that her new chief of security, a man named Panaka, will be taking unprecedented steps to ensure the safety of all Naboo diplomats. The Queen, for example, is to be surrounded by a clutch of handmaidens, all of whom resemble her to some extent.
And you're to be chaperoned at all times? That won't do.
I'll convince Panaka otherwise.
They stopped to watch a group of younglings at play under one of the plaza's banners. Plagueis indicated a nearby bench, but Palpatine's disquiet wouldn't allow him to sit.
Did the Queen express any concern about the presence of so many Trade Federation freighters?
Palpatine shook his head.
The fleet is holding at the edge of the system, awaiting word from me to jump to Naboo. As angry as Gunray is about the taxation legislation, I had to convince him that Naboo is significant enough to ensure galactic interest in the blockade. I assured him that Amidala will not allow her people to suffer, and that before a month has elapsed, she will sign a treaty that will make Naboo and Naboo's plasma property of the Trade Federation.
The transpirator concealed Damask's smile, but it was clear that he liked what he heard.
While Valorum dithers, Senator Palpatine garners the sympathy of the electorate.
He tracked Palpatine.
Is it not a measure of our success that we can award worlds as if they were mere business contracts?
A group of well-dressed Twi'leks sauntered by, gaping at Palpatine in recognition. That he should openly fraternize with a Mune was an indication of the power and influence of both beings. It was Damask who had stressed the importance of their being seen together in public. And so, in the weeks since the Mune had arrived on Coruscant, they had dined on several occasions at the Minari and other exclusive restaurants, and had attended recitals at both the Coruscant and Galaxy's operas. Most recently, they had been present at an elite gathering in 500 Republica, hosted by Senator Orn Fritar, at which Plagueis had overheard the Rutian Twi'lek discussing plans to nominate Palpatine for the chancellorship. Next on their busy agenda was a political rally scheduled to take place on Coruscant's Perlemian Orbital Facility, where potential candidates for the office of Supreme Chancellor would have a chance to mingle with corporation executives, lobbyists, campaigners, and even some Jedi masters.
A blockade followed by an actual invasion isn't likely to win the Trade Federation any new allies. But if nothing else, we'll be able to assess the performance of Gunray's droid army and make adjustments as necessary.
Through their own carelessness, the Nymordians managed to compromise their secret foundries on Eos and Alaris Prime, Palpatine said, letting some of his exasperation show.
Damask eyed him.
For the moment, they have what they need. The acquisition of Naboo will demonstrate the failings of diplomacy and prompt a sense of militancy among the Jedi.
Keeping his gaze fixed on Palpatine, he added,
In preparation for the coming war, we will relocate Bactoid armor to Geonosis. Even then, however, we can't equip our allies with sufficient weapons to secure a quick victory. A drawn-out conflict will ensure a galaxy pounded to a pulp and eager to embrace us.
Palpatine finally sat down. We still need to raise an army for the Jedi to command, but one that answers ultimately to the Supreme Chancellor.
A grown army could be designed to do just that.
Palpatine considered it. It sounds too simple. Jedi are not easily taken by surprise. Honed for warfare, they will be even more difficult to ensnare.
At the end of a long war, perhaps, with victory in sight.
To achieve that, both sides would have to be managed. Palpatine blew out his breath. Even if a surprise attack could be launched, not every Jedi would be in the field.
Only those suitable for combat would need concern us.
Palpatine broke a long silence. The Kaminoan cloners failed you once. Damask acknowledged the statement with a nod.
Because I gave them a Yanchori template. They told me then that your species might be easier to replicate.
You'll contact them again?
This army must not be traced to us. But there is someone I might be able to persuade to place the initial order.
Palpatine waited, but Damask had nothing to add. The fact that he had said as much about the matter as he intended to say brought Palpatine full circle to consternation. Abruptly, he stood and paced away from the bench.
Instruct the Nymordians to launch the blockade,
Damask said to his back.
It's important that events be set in motion before the Orbital Facility Congress.
When Palpatine didn't respond, Plagueis stood and followed him.
What's troubling you, Sidious? Perhaps you feel that you've become nothing more than a messenger.
Palpatine whirled on him. Yes, at times. But I know my place, and am content with it.
What, then, has whipped you to a froth?
The Nymoidians, Palpatine said with sudden conviction. In addition to Gunray, I have been dealing with three others. Hako, Galtay, and Monchar.
I know Monchar slightly. He maintains a suite in the Kaldani spires.
He was absent when I last spoke with Gunray. Suspicion bloomed in the Mune's eyes, and he hissed.
Where were they, then?
Aboard their flagship. Gunray claimed that Monchar had taken ill as a result of rich food.
But you know better.
Palpatine nodded. The sniveling toady knows about the blockade. I suspect that he's on the loose and out for profit. Damask's eyes flashed yellow.
This is what happens when beings are promoted beyond their level of competence.
Palpatine tensed in anger.
Not you, Gunray and his ilk. The Force harrows and penalizes us for consorting with those too ignorant to appreciate and execute our designs.
Palpatine took comfort in the fact that even Plagueis had his limits. I fail to heed your words about sudden reversals. Damask frowned at him, then relaxed.
I ignore my own advice. The blockade must wait.
I will recall Maul, Palpatine said. Two weeks after the Nymordians' unannounced disappearance from the flagship Sayakak, Plagueis and Sidious knew only that Darth Maul had succeeded in tracking down and killing Hath Monchar, though not without wide-ranging collateral damage, and that Maul had piloted the stealth infiltrator to a docking station linked by a series of zero-G airlocks to the Pelimian Orbital Facility's principal reception dome. A grand enclosure that looked out on a sweep of Coruscant and the stars beyond, and was designed to feel more like a garden in space than a sterile conference hall. Just then, the dome was filled with senators and judges, corporate leaders and ambassadors, power brokers and media pundits, and contingents of Senate guards and Jedi.
Why did you order him to come here, of all places?
Damask asked Palpatine during a respite from the handshaking casual conversation and forced conviviality. Dressed in their finest robes, they were standing near a backlighted waterfall, nodding to passing beings, even as the two of them conspired.
He has cut a swath of destruction through the Crimson Corridor and killed two Jedi, along with beings of a dozen species, including a Hutt. We can't trust that someone isn't on his scent. If not Jedi, then perhaps law enforcement personnel. If by some fluke he were to be apprehended, he has the skill to scramble the minds of ordinary beings, but not to cloak himself from a Jedi. Both our existence and our plans for the blockade could be endangered.
Jedi were on his scent, Palpatine explained. That's precisely why I ordered him off-world.
Damask started to respond, but stopped himself and began again.
He is in possession of this holocron Monchar recorded.
Palpatine nodded.
I instructed Pestage to clear a route through a seldom-used docking bay. I merely have to rendezvous with Maul at the prearranged time and place.
Damask still wasn't convinced. The Monchar affair had almost ended in catastrophe. It was as if the Force, so often compared to a current, had been diverted into a sheer canyon and twisted back on itself to generate treacherous eddies and hydraulics.
Why not simply have him surrender the crystal to Pestige?
We don't know what other sensitive data the holocron might contain.
Damask exhaled forcefully through the mask.
I trust that at least you instructed him not to be seen.
He glanced around him.
A tattooed Zabrak enrobed in head-to-toe black would certainly stand out among this crowd.
Palpatine couldn't argue the point. Off to one side of them stood Senator Bail Antilles and his aides, a prince on his homeworld of Alderaan and chair of the Senate's Internal Activities Committee. The handsome, dark-haired Antilles was surrounded by a crowd that included Core World senators and business beings, all of whom had pledged to support him in the coming election, and Jedi Master Joris Sebaoth, who had been enlisted to arbitrate a dispute among some of Alderaan's royal houses. An arrogant and wild-eyed human, Sebaoth was cut from the same cloth as Dooku, whose absence from the political gathering had been noted by many. Antilles had been the Sith's pawn in bringing to the fore accusations of wrongdoing on the part of Valorum during the Eriadu crisis. But the notoriety he had gained as a result, in the Senate and in the media, had bolstered his campaign and made him the current top candidate for the chancellorship. No Jedi had attached themselves to Ainley Teem, who was also within view. But the Malastare Gran was widely popular on many mid- and outer-rim worlds and enjoyed the support of Senator Lot Dodd of the Trade Federation and Shu Mai of the Commerce Guild. At the center of the domed hall stood Valorum and Sei Taria, who was as media-savvy as she was lovely. Though ineligible for re-election, recently stripped of some of his senatorial powers, and frequently engaged in defending himself against accusations by the Ethics Committee, Valorum had managed to make himself the center of attention due to the presence of Masters Yoda, Mace Windu, and Adi Gallia among his followers. Merely by standing with the Supreme Chancellor, the Jedi were sending a message that they would continue to support him for the remainder of his term of office, the calumny of illegal enrichment notwithstanding. With the Trade Federation fleet still holding in the Chamal sector, and without a besieged world to generate sympathy and support for his nomination, Palpatine might have been just one more potential nominee, but for the company of Higo Damask, Banking Clan co-chairman San Hill, recently appointed Senate Vice Chairman Mas Amida, and Senator Ornfree Tarr, a moving target for Antilles' investigation into corruption, and now ostracized by the Rim faction for backing Palpatine. It's almost time, Palpatine said. He indicated a gardened area of dwarf trees and shrubs close to where An Li Tim was conferring with a handful of senators.
I'll trade quips with the Grand, then find some pretext to excuse myself.
Damask grunted noncommittally.
My own target is in sight in any case.
Without further word, the two separated, Damask weaving his way through the crowd toward a grim-faced, bearded human Jedi who was standing apart from everyone observing the scene.
Master Sifo Dyas.
The top-knotted Jedi turned, and recognizing him, nodded in greeting.
Magister Damask.
I hope I'm not intruding.
Sifo Dyas shook his head, his gaze fixed on the breath mask.
No, I was...
He exhaled and began again, adjusting his stance.
Until your recent arrival on Coruscant, I was under the impression that you had retired.
Damask loosed an exaggerated sigh.
It is not in Immune's blood to retire. I work now with only a few powerful but largely invisible clients.
The Jedi lifted a graying eyebrow.
It seems I can't view a news hollow that doesn't feature you and Senator Palpatine, who is anything but invisible.
To my thinking, he is the only one capable of rescuing the Republic from the brink.
Sifo Dyas grunted.
To remain untouched by scandal for 20 years is in itself extraordinary. So perhaps you're right.
Damask waited a moment, then said,
I have never forgotten our discussion on Sereno.
What discussion was that, Magister?
We spoke at some length of threats that were assailing the Republic even then.
Sifo Dyas grew pensive.
I have some vague recollection.
Well, what with assassinations, taxation of the free trade zones, posturing by the Trade Federation, and accusations of political impropriety, the conversation has been much on my mind of late. Fractiousness, factionalism, inter-system conflicts. Even in this hall, the Jedi appear to be divided in their loyalties. Master Sybioth here, Masters Yoda and Galea there, and yet no sign of Master Dooku.
Sifo Dyas said nothing.
Master Jedi, I want to share with you a suspicion I've been carrying like a burden.
Damask paused.
I have reason to suspect that the Trade Federation has secretly been procuring more weapons than anyone realizes.
Sifo Dyas's forehead furrowed.
Do you have evidence of this?
No hard evidence, but my business demands a thorough knowledge of the investment markets. Also, my clients sometimes reveal information to me in private.
Then you are breaking confidentiality by coming to me with this.
I am, but only because I believe so strongly that what was once speculation is now fact. To go further, I predict that a civil war is brewing. I give the Republic 15 years at the most. Soon we'll see disgruntled star systems begin to secede. They will lack only a strong, charismatic leader to unite them.
He fell briefly silent before adding,
I will be blunt with you, Master Sifo Dyas. The Republic will be vulnerable. The Jedi will be too few to turn the tide. A military needs to be created now, while there's still a chance.
Sifo Dyas folded his arms across his chest.
I encourage you to share this with Supreme Chancellor Valorum, or even Senator Palpatine, Magister.
I intend to. But even under Chancellor Valorum's watch, this Senate will not overturn the Reformation Act. Too many senators have a financial stake in galactic war. They are heavily invested in corporations that will grow fat on profits from weapons and reconstruction. War will be beneficial for an economy they now view as stagnant.
Are you willing to state this in front of an investigatory committee?
Damask frowned with his eyes.
You have to understand that many of these corporations are owned and operated by my clients.
A dark look came over the Jedi's face.
You have read my thoughts, Magister. I have also sensed that war is imminent. I've confessed as much to Master Yoda and others, but to no avail. They give all appearances of being unconcerned or preoccupied. I'm no longer sure.
Master Dooku as well.
Sifo Dyas sniffed.
Unfortunately, Magister, Dooku's recent statements about Republic discord and our Order's self-righteousness have only added to my concern.
You said that you have some vague recall of our conversation on Sereno. Do you remember my mentioning a group of gifted cloners?
I'm sorry, I do not.
They are native to an extragalactic world called Kamino. I have, on occasion, done business with them on behalf of clients who desire cloned creatures or require cloned laborers capable of working in harsh environments.
The Jedi shook his head in uncertainty.
What does this have to do with anything?
I believe that the Kaminoans could be induced to grow and train a cloned army.
Sifo Dyas took a long moment to reply.
You said yourself that the Republic would never sanction an army.
The Republic needn't know. Neither would the Jedi Order have to know. It would be an army that might never have to be used, and yet be available in reserve should need ever arise.
Who in their right mind would fund an army that might never be used?
I would, along with some of my associates in the banking clan. And in conjunction with contacts in Rothana Heavy Engineering, which would supply the ships, armaments, and other materiel.
Sifo Dyas fixed him with a look.
Come to the point, Magister.
The Kaminoans will not create an army for me, but they would do so for the Jedi Order. They have been fascinated by the Jedi for millennia.
Sifo Dyas's dark brown eyes widened.
You're not proposing cloning Jedi?
No. I have been assured that such a thing is impossible in any case. But I have also been assured that a human army, a million strong, could be ready for deployment in as few as 10 years.
You're suggesting that I circumvent the High Council?
I suppose I am. The Kaminoans need only a modest down payment, which I could provide to you through untraceable accounts I maintain in Outer Rim banks.
Again the Jedi remained silent for a long moment.
I need time to consider this.
Of course you do. And when you've reached a decision, you can contact me at my residence downside.
Sifo Dyas nodded in glum introspection, and Damask spun on his heel and disappeared into the crowd. Palpatine was just returning to the place where they had been standing earlier, his eyes and his movements suggesting unusual excitement.
You have the holocron,
Damask said as he approached.
Yes, but not from Maul.
Damask waited for an explanation.
It was dropped into my hand by none other than the information broker Maul had been pursuing and thought dead,
Lorne Pavan. The fact that Pavan's right hand had been cleanly and recently amputated told me at once that the two fought in one of the airlocks.
This Pavan defeated Maul.
Palpatine shook his head.
But I suspect that Pavan somehow managed to outwit him and take him by surprise.
Incredible,
Damask said, astonished that events could become even more convoluted.
Then Pavan must know what the holocron contains.
I'm supposed to deliver it to the Jedi, Palpatine said with obvious amusement.
And looking around added,
perhaps to Yoda or Windu.
Pavan.
Palpatine squared his shoulders.
Pestige and Doriana are escorting him downside.
where he'll receive medical attention, maybe even a new hand, and a comfortable hotel suite in which to spend the final day of his life.
A reward we should withhold from Maul, but probably won't.
Damask glanced at Palpatine.
In any event, it wasn't Pavan who handed you the holocron. It was delivered by the dark side.
Palpatine thought about it for a moment. And Sifo Dyas, will he do it?
Even if he decides against it, there may be a way to place the order in his name. But the Force tells me that he will do it.
That will make him a potential danger to us.
Damask nodded.
But it won't matter. We have become invincible.
This will never do, Palpatine thought as he sat opposite Valorum in the Supreme Chancellor's cloud-cutting office in the Senate building, listening to him drawn on about his troubles with the Ethics Committee. The view through the large triangular windows was pleasant enough, but the office was far too small. Worse, it felt more like a relic from a bygone age than a nerve center for the new order. No amount of remodeling could transform it into the space Palpatine imagined for himself. Perhaps a new building was required, an annex of sorts, or, better still, an executive office building, if only to grant those who worked there the illusion that their pitiful efforts mattered.
The deeper my lawyers and accountants pursue this matter, the more dead ends they encounter, Valorum was saying.
Dark circles underscored his eyes, and his hands were trembling slightly.
The erodium ingots the Nebula Front stole from the Trade Federation freighter were converted to credits, which were used to finance their operations on Asmaru and Eriadu. But the ingots themselves moved through a series of specious banks and other financial institutions and were ultimately invested in Valorum shipping by unknown parties. I say unknown because the beings listed as investors appear never to have existed.
Baffling, Palpatine said, drawing out the word. I don't know what to think.
A week had passed since the Perlemian political gathering. Lorne Pavan was dead by Maul's lightsaber, a day before an artificial hand was to have been grafted to the information broker's stub of forearm.
Cost-cutting, Plagueis had remarked at the time.
Valorum was resting his head in his hands.
That someone or some organization engineered this to cripple me is beyond doubt. The question of why anyone, even my most stalwart detractors in the Senate, would essentially discard tens of millions of credits to achieve this in the final months of my term is inexplicable.
He raised his face to Palpatine.
My immediate predecessors were bold, and they knew how to manage the Senate. I believed I could bring something different to the office, a quieter diplomacy, one informed by the Force and by the ideals of the Jedi Order.
Palpatine suppressed an urge to leap across the desk and strangle him.
I realize that I've made some poor decisions, but has any Chancellor in the past century had to face more challenges than I have? Has any Chancellor had to deal with a more corrupt and self-serving Senate, or more megalomaniacal corporations?
Valorum closed his eyes and exhaled.
Whoever is behind this machination wants nothing more than to destroy my legacy entirely, to make the name Valorum seem a stain on history.
Then we must double our efforts to exonerate you, Palpatine said.
Valorum laughed without amusement.
I'm useless to the Republic if we can't. Until the matter is resolved, I'm prohibited from sanctioning the use of Jedi or judicials to intervene in disputes. I'm not permitted to convene special sessions
without the express consent of this new vice-chancellor, Masamida, who blocks my every proposal and venerates procedure as if it were holy text.
Deception begins with bureaucracy, Palpatine said. Silent for a moment, Valorum adopted an expression of resolve.
I'm not without ideas.
He tapped a touchscreen built into his desk, and a large data display resolved above the holoprojector. Rising from his chair, he indicated a graph on which several dozen corporations were listed.
One might assume, in light of the accusations stacked against me, that my family's concern on Eriadu would suffer a sudden decline in the market, but precisely the opposite is happening. Credits have been flowing into Valorum Shipping at an unparalleled rate, and to several other shipping and transport concerns as well, many of them based in the Outer Rim, and that's not all.
His hands returned to the touchscreen, and a second graph took shape alongside the first.
Investments in minor suppliers of plasma and alternative energy conglomerates have increased threefold. But most important, a surge has occurred in the military supply sector, with astonishing growth in Bactoid Armor Workshop, Heor Chal Engineering, the Kalakoid Creation Nest, and similar providers.
Palpatine, despite himself, was impressed.
What do these data suggest? That some nefarious business is unfolding under our very noses. That even the scandal in which I'm embroiled may be part of a larger plan.
Palpatine was about to respond when the voice of Valorum's personal secretary issued from the intercom.
Supreme Chancellor, I apologize for interrupting, but we have received an urgent transmission from Queen Amidala of Naboo.
The Queen?
Palpatine said with theatrical surprise.
Can you direct the transmission to my office? Valorum said.
Our comtechs are telling me that the signal is very weak, but that they will do their best.
Palpatine and Valorum turned to the office holoprojector table and waited. Within moments, a noisy, fluctuating 3D image of Naboo's pale-faced teenage queen appeared.
Supreme Chancellor Valorum, we bring news of a grave development on our homeworld. Without warning, the Nymordian faction of the Trade Federation has initiated a blockade. Their massive freighters encircle our world, and no ships are permitted to arrive or depart.
Palpatine and Valorum exchanged stunned looks.
How perfectly she plays her part, Palpatine thought.
Sitting on her throne like some costumed and overly made-up animatronic doll. The stately pose, the uninflected voice, long-bearded advisor Sayo Bibble standing to one side, dark-complected security chief Panaka to the other.
Your Highness, have the Nymordians communicated any demands?
Valorum asked as the blue-tinged image flickered, stabilized, and flickered again.
Viceroy Gunray states that the blockade has been launched in protest of the Senate's decision to tax shipping in the free trade zones. He assures that any attempts to break the embargo will meet with deadly force. Unless the new regulations are rescinded, he is prepared to see everyone on Naboo starve.
Valorum clenched his hands.
Your Majesty, Senator Palpatine is here with me.
Neither Amidala's expression nor her flat tone of voice wavered.
Senator Palpatine, we are pleased that you are able to hear this news firsthand.
Your Highness, Palpatine said, stepping into view of the holoprojector cams and inclining his head. I will contact the Trade Federation delegates immediately and demand that this blockade be terminated.
Demands may not be enough to sway them, Senator. Naboo requests that the Republic intervene in this matter as quickly as possible.
And it will, Your Highness, Valorum said all too quickly. I will convene a special session. I pledge that Naboo will have my undivided attention.
Amidala nodded.
You have shown us much courtesy in the past, Supreme Chancellor. We trust that you will do everything in your power, as you are our only hope.
The transmission ended abruptly.
The face of this nefarious business reveals itself, Palpatine said. Valorum returned to his desk and sat.
I give you my word for your help during the Inchori crisis and for so many years of friendship, that this situation will not stand. Though my hands be bound, I will find some way to resolve this.
I know that you will try, Supreme Chancellor. Valorum took a deep breath.
One word of advice, Palpatine. Prepare to be thrust into the spotlight.